welcome to Prophecy Girls, a Buffy rewatch podcast.
I'm Kara Babcock, pronouns she, her.
And I'm Stephanie Chow, pronouns she, her.
Join us each week as we break down every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is a spoiler-free podcast.
Whether you're watching for the first time
or longtime fans like us,
we'll be analyzing every episode, character, and storyline like it's our first time, too.
During this rewatch, we'll reminisce about our memories of Buffy,
discuss the show's cultural impact,
and provide honest commentary from a 21st century lens.
Thanks for listening.
Now, on to the episode. Season 7, Episode 11, Showtime!
That's what you and I say at the start of every episode before we start recording. I say, it's showtime, Steph, and then you say, fine.
Did you like this episode?
Surprisingly, yes. I went into it thinking I wasn't going to like it, for reasons that I'll get into pretty quickly in the episode. And then the episode won me over.
Yes, by the end of it, I was like, go Buffy, go Dawn. Go Willow.
Exactly.
Go, even Xander. Sure. Yeah. I was saying go team at the end of the episode. If you have some critiques about this episode, I think I know what you're going to be saying because I probably have the same ones. One complaint that I have that I'm sure you won't have, Kara, is that a lot of these scenes in this episode are very long and involve a lot of chatter. And whenever those scenes happen in an episode, back to back to back to back to back, I get tired because I'm doing my notes and I'm just like, God, You potentials, you're so chatty, God.
You're worse than the chatty doctor.
They really are. Except like, so like sometimes I just like put like, the general discussion is this, right? Because when you got four or five girls talking over each other, I'm like, oh man, this is a lot. But otherwise, there are some great moments in this episode. Lots of action in this episode. I'm excited. Do you have an alternative name for the episode?
No.
Nor do I.
We were just thinking about this before recording, and I often forget to come up with an alternative name, and then I just come up with one on the spot. That's why they're never very good listeners behind the scenes. And I am too tired tonight.
Well, mine are never good either, and I actually think about them. So, but I actually like Showtime for this episode. I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, Buffy even says it in the episode. Like, it's already
Before we get into it, I feel like we should probably mention this because we posted about it on social media. We mentioned it in our Instagram Live that we did last week. I guess if we were smart, we would have said this in last week's recording because now this is coming out 2 weeks after
Kara,
Instagram Live.
Don't do that to us. Don't make us see things and plan.
Anyway, for anybody who doesn't follow us on social media, we should probably just announce here on the podcast feed, we are spinning off Prophecy Girls. We are going to cover Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And then Gilmore Girls.
And then Dairy Girls. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that would be good. No, in all seriousness, you asked for it. You're getting it. We are going to cover Angel next. We're going to take a big, long break for a couple of months after we finish Buffy this summer. There will be bonus episodes. Don't worry. We're not just disappearing off the internet. But we just need to rest and recharge. We're going to come back and start recording Angel later at the end of 2024. And you'll start getting episodes of Angel sometime end of 2024, start of 2025. It's going to be a seasonal model, which means that Steph and I are going to record the entire season before we start releasing episodes, which is just going to make the recording and the scheduling and the editing all just a little bit more sustainable for us. And we're doing that because we want to keep doing Prophecy Girls. And in order to keep doing it, we need to not burn out. So if you have questions, if you've got ideas or suggestions, you know how to contact us. Join us on our Discord, email us, follow us on social media for more updates about that. But yes, it is official. We have announced it. Prophecy Girls are going to Los Angeles.
Yes. Yes. I'm very excited to reunite with my ex-boyfriend Angel to see what he gets up to, how his Instagram career is going, his modeling career, charcuterie business. There's a lot of things that we need to figure
tai
out.
Tai Chi, that would be big in LA, right?
Oh yeah. Perhaps he'll invent veganism while he's there. Like there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening.
I'm happy I could give you that visualization, Steph, since you know there really wasn't much Principal Wood in this episode at all, right? So I know you're really kind of suffering right now.
Yes, it's like so hit and miss season 7, and people are like, it's, you know, they'll think it's because of the episodes themselves or the plot or something. It's not. It's hit or miss when Robin Wood is or is not in the episodes. But yeah, we're excited for Angel. Whoop! We'll see you guys at the end of the year in LA. For now, let's get into this episode. So a girl is getting off the bus at Sunnydale bus station at nighttime, Kara. And I was like, girl, you better not get impotted. Like, everybody remember season 2.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, when was the last time we saw the bus station? And I know we've seen it more recently because like Faith was there and whatnot. But like, I'm just like, this is giving me serious Inca Mummy Girl vibes.
Right? Like, this girl better fucking take off before something terrible happens to her. No one is there to pick her up. Just like Empata. Oh no, this is not going well. So she grabs a phone book and notices all the pages that she needs, I'm assuming, are ripped out. Did the first do that? That evil bastard.
I think we need to pause for a moment, right? Because phone books are obsolete technology nowadays. So my thought as I was watching this scene was, gosh, Steph, do you remember when you could just, you got a book delivered to your house every year?
Yeah.
And you could just look up other people's phone numbers. It feels like phone numbers these days are these precious commodities. And if you don't have somebody's phone number or know how to get it, then you're stuck. There's no way to look it up.
It wasn't just the phone number. It was your full address.
Yes.
And sometimes
it was a wild time.
Like if you had to look up, like let's say my friend Kara Babcock, I want to call her because I'm a little girl and I'm going to ask her if she can come over for a sleepover. I got to look up her. I got to figure out Babcock, like who's her father, like, or the mother it could be, you know, so you might end up calling many names until you get the right Babcock in Thunder Bay. And that's Thunder Bay. There's probably only like two. Like, well, imagine Chow in Toronto. So many.
And sometimes people are like listed under their initial or something, right?
Yeah.
It's just, it's wild to think that in my lifetime, we went from this very kind of strange transparency around things like phone numbers and addresses. And nowadays, of course, it's easier than ever to put information about yourself online. So we have less privacy, yet at the same time, I feel like there's also less transparency, if that makes sense. It's pretty easy to dox somebody if you put your mind to it. And we share far more about our lives, most of us, online than, you know, was known in general in public before. But those little details like your phone number and your address are harder to find than they used to be. And that paradigm shift happening in my lifetime, happening, you know, since this show came out, is so fascinating.
And we've talked about phone books before on this podcast because we know that Angel was listed in there as Angel. But you know what's funny too, like phone books, because they would every year they would send out the new one.
Well, they still do, it's just now it's just the yellow pages.
Okay, because yeah, my I'm pretty sure my dad like had like under our front desk area had like years and years worth. Like it just takes up a lot of room, people. So you know, once again, I look at my phone and I give it a kiss. Mwah. Love you. Okay. Yeah, no one's coming to get this girl except for the robed figures. Did they say what those names were last episode? They must have. I think he called them the Harbingers or something. The Bringers? I don't know.
The Bringers, yeah.
The Bringers. Their knives are out. They have no eyes, but they can see. They're like that. they're good like that. So they start to advance on this girl, but then Buffy shows up, starts throwing them around. She fights them all three at once. She stabs one, breaks another's neck. And I'll just add that one, if you get a really good look at him, was Asian.
The show did that to you on purpose, Steph.
Like he could have been the one that got stabbed or thrown in the back of the knife, but like, no, we're gonna snap this one's neck.
So I have a question, which is, are the Bringers human? Is this a Knights of Byzantium situation, right? Because normally Buffy's like, no, kill humans, but she's killing these bringers.
I think they must not be human because she is real chill about killing them. But also, like I said, they're blind, but they can see.
It's a good thing they don't ride horses.
If I see one horsey, then our worst nightmares have been confirmed, that the Knights of Byzantium went straight to becoming bringers after Glory.
they left one cult, and it's like people who leave a cult and then immediately join another cult.
Yeah. Or these are the ones that didn't make it into the Knights of Byzantium. You know what I mean? It's like, you're too weird. And then they got even weirder. So
this is their next LARPing adventure. And they got really hardcore about the cosplay.
Like, whoa. I'm not going to scar myself for the quest. Oh, okay. Buffy also chucks a knife into the back of another one. So also, Kara, like last episode, I don't even know where we are anymore. Two episodes ago, they were attacked by a bunch of harbingers or bringers, and Buffy murdered a bunch of those in her house as well. So are there just like harbinger bodies all over Sunnydale right now? Like, she just leaves these guys here at the bus stop.
I don't even know what to say other than that the police in Sunnydale are deeply stupid.
I also want to add that, like, this girl exited the bus, right, because she arrived in Sunnydale. Mm-hmm. Even if she was the only person on the bus driver would still be there. So he's probably just like drinking his coffee, watching this happen outside.
Right? Like, he doesn't even have the. Does he have his newspaper open? Maybe he's just got his hands in the newspaper or something, so he can't see anything going on.
He's like, I do not get out here. I literally hold my piss until the next town. Like, I don't get out of Sunnydale. Sorry. Good luck out there. So okay. We're sidetracked. So Buffy goes up to the girl and says, Rona, right? I just got word you're arriving. And Rona's like, you're her. They told me I'd be safe here. Buffy's like, yeah, you'll be safe, like, with me around next time you're attacked. And Rona's like, next time you say I'm going to get attacked again? And Buffy says, welcome to the Hellmouth. Cut to credits.
So I think it's very interesting what the show is doing here, because there's like a cycle happening, right, where the episode begins and ends with potentials looking up to Buffy as this leader, as this mythical figure, the Slayer. So we see it here in microcosm between Buffy and Rona, where, you know, Buffy literally saves Rona's life. And then as the episode goes on, people start to lose faith in Buffy. And then by the end of the episode, they've regained that trust and that belief, and they're looking up to Buffy again. And I think that's really fascinating.
As they should. So Willow is on the floor. Willow's sleeping on the floor because she doesn't want to sleep in the bed with Kennedy. So Kennedy is saying, you know, you don't have to sleep down there. Come on up. Bed's all comfy. And Willow's like, no, I like it down here. It's firm. And she's uneasy because Buffy is out getting that girl. She says that Giles has the coven searching for other slayers in waiting to send our way. There will be a lot of more of you guys soon. So Kennedy says, okay, so you're saying I should enjoy this bed, having this bed all to myself as long as I can. Willow's like, yeah, it's starting to get pretty crowded around here. Kennedy says, with this many girls, if we don't get another bathroom in this house soon, things are going to get ugly. So this is actually a really good point, Kara, because we only know of the upstairs bathroom. Like, surely there's a bathroom on the main floor. Surely. But we've never seen one. And like, but, or a basement bathroom.
You and I talked about this last week when the potential showed up, and it was just the three of them at that time. And I pointed out the logistics involved with the food and the bathroom situation. It's totally, you know, even if they weren't all girls, right? Like, just that many people in a house with one bathroom, especially if they're eating Dawn's cooking. I'm just saying.
And then once Spike joins them, we know he poops. So like, that's just another person. Oh, we are loopy again today. We need to get some sleep so we can put out a decent fucking episode. Okay. Willow points out that Kennedy sounds like she probably had to share with a lot of siblings. And Kennedy lets us know that she was fucking rich, okay? Kennedy is a wealthy chick. She only had to ever share with her half-sister, but her bedroom was in a different wing of the house. And Willow was like, what about that? And Kennedy's like, my house has a few wings, but our summer home in the Hamptons didn't have any at all. Well, one. And Willow is like shook by this information. And I was like, Willow, you're rich too. Maybe not right, Hamptons summer home rich.
Yeah, there's Sunnydale rich, though. And then there's Hamptons rich, right? Like, Willow is like Thunder Bay rich, right? Where it's like, okay, so your family, you know, fairly well off. You've got like the larger house. Maybe you've got the summer camp, the cottage. Like this is the Thunder Bay style of rich, right? But that's different from Hampton's rich. Kennedy is like, my parents are having, you know, diplomats and artists and athletes over for dinners at our house.
Yeah, she probably went to private school, right? Like, yeah. Willow's like, pwah. And Kennedy asks Willow about the witchcraft. She's like, it sounds new agey. And Willow's like, it's safe to say that what I practice is definitely old agey. So Kennedy wants to show her, she's like, show me a trick, pull a rabbit out or something, or make something float. And Willow's like, it's almost early and we really need to get some sleep. And Kennedy's like, if I wanted to sleep, I'd be downstairs catching Z's with the others. So Kennedy and Willow are obviously getting along. Willow, as I said in the last episode, which blew your mind, Kara, is that Kennedy was flirting with Willow and she was like shook by that. So that's probably the reason why she doesn't want to sleep in the bed.
I knew that Kennedy was flirting with Willow. I hadn't picked up on the specifics of that flirting. I think it's interesting that Kennedy has zero comprehension of how dangerous the magics with a K are and what Willow has been through.
There are no magics with a K in the Hamptons, Kara. They only exist in small towns.
I don't know. A lot of people in the Hamptons are probably doing ketamine, I'm just saying.
They're having glowios there too, for sure. So we're going to cut to one of the longest explainy scenes of my life, was my first note, because clearly I went back up to write that note in after writing out the scene. So, okay, lots of exposition coming your way. The girls are all up and talking. Molly is bitching about Annabelle. I was like, rude, she's dead. But she's saying, like, shoot, Annabelle was always like, control your fear. And then she's scampering off right into the Turrican's vampire. Poor Annie. So, also, I would like to confirm, as last episode, I guessed that Molly was Australian. After our live stream on Instagram the other day, Kara, an actual Australian said, nope, not us. So, and not that I didn't believe you, Kara, but I need to hear it from the source.
We don't claim her.
So there are three new girls on the ground listening to Molly talk. Sookie Stackhouse from Bon Temps, Louisiana, is in the middle. She's the blonde one. And she's like, great. So the Slayer, who is, okay, I'm not even gonna attempt to do her accent, but she's got like a Southern accent. So the Slayer, who's supposed to protect us, let her get killed. And Molly's like, she didn't let her. Annabelle was foolish. Buffy can't be faulted for arriving too late. And there's a new brunette. And the brunette says, it's not like she could have stopped it. Super vampire messed her up pretty good. And then there's a redhead. And the redhead says, she still looked at like a big bruise when I got here. And that was like the day after.
Okay, so the brunette, did you recognize her?
I did, but from what? Something kid, yes. Kid show.
That's yes. LaLaine, who played Miranda in the Lizzie McGuire show.
Ah, there it is. There it is. I was staring at this girl and I was like, I know you.
Yes, I grew up on the Lizzie McGuire show. That was my jam on the Family Channel here in Canada, because that's what we had, sort of the Disney Channel.
You can't touch Canada, Disney.
All the Disney shows, but they called it the Family Channel. I love this country. And then the redhead is Felicia Day. And this was probably her first kind of big acting role. And nowadays, of course, she's like one of the queens of nerddom.
Is she?
Yes.
I know her and Tom Lank do a podcast together.
Yeah. Yeah. She did a fair amount of kind of like guest spots and things after Buffy. And then she started producing independent web series, most notably The Guild, which is quite good. I highly recommend it. It's like a fun, like a spoofy series about D&D and tabletop and stuff. And she ended up founding a media company, Geek and Sundry, that produced content on YouTube, and then sold that for, you know, a pretty penny. And now she does a bunch of like production and streaming and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, nice. And then she also starred in Dr. Horrible's.
Yes, that's a good point. Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog with Neil Patrick Harris and Nathan Fillion.
Also produced and directed and paid for and everything by Joss Whedon. So clearly he liked her in this. He wants to use her again. So Also, I like that these girls are more or less telling us what day it is. Like, you know, last episode we were like, is it Christmas? What, like, is it March break? Like, what, where are we in the time zone? But at least the redhead is saying it's been a day, at least a day or two since the last episode. And in that time, my God, do I hope that Buffy got some well-deserved shut-eye. You know, I hope she had a nap or slept for a good 8 hours straight, you know? Sookie Stackhouse says, why isn't she back yet? She left to get the girl over an hour ago. Maybe she ran into trouble. You don't think she was too late again? And Xander, who's been trying to sleep on the couch next to them, is like, maybe we can save the maybes for a more dayish part of the day, girls. Potential slayers can function without sleep. Me, I'm not good without my usual 90 minutes. So why is Xander sleeping on the couch here?
That's a good question. I had a similar thought. The only thing I can think of is they just don't want anybody outside of the house right now. So everybody's staying at the Somerset house, including Xander.
For protection, probably, right? Safety.
Somebody has to fix those windows.
I was also thinking, though, like, but why is Xander sleeping in the living room where the girls are sleeping? You know, like, you'd think he'd be like, I'll sleep in the basement, or I don't know, but he could have kipped with Willow. You know, like, there's just, I'm just, you know.
Sure. Just, like, I had a similar thought in terms of, like, if I were those girls, would it be a little weird to me that a man who's, like, what is he, like, 6-7 years older than them at this point? Maybe even older? I don't know mm-hmm. how old they are.
They're like,
are they 14, 15?
Well, I have a big question about that later. Like, what the fuck? Anyway, but yeah, I hear you.
He's
yeah.
between 6 and 10 years older than them. It's not so much it being creepy as I feel like, is that not like just awkward that this older dude is like sleeping in the same room?
Yeah, it is awkward. And that's why I'm also like, Xander, it's a weird choice for you to sleep on the couch here. If you don't want to hear them talking, go somewhere else. Buffy's not home. Go sleep on her floor, you know, like this. So anyway, Andrew pipes up and says, I'm with him. Keep the chatter down. Or speak up so I can hear you. I'm bored. Episode one, bored. And he's tied up still. He's still in the chair. He's not that far off of them.
It's a Star Wars reference.
Yes, it is. And I don't know, Andrew, I liked episode one. So Buffy comes in with Rhona and they say, hey, including Andrew says hi. And Rhona's like, can I ask why he's tied to a chair? And Xander's like, the question you should be asking is, why isn't he gagged? So Giles comes in with Anya and they tell Molly to go show the new girl where the kitchen is and to get some food. And Molly's like, fair enough. A bit peckish myself. And Rhona doesn't understand her wild accent. She must have also thought she was from Australia briefly. But she's just like, what does she mean? And Anya says, oh, that's English for hungry. And Rhona's like, oh, here, I thought hungry was English for hungry. And she follows her. So do you remember back in season 3 when Faith was a predominant person on this show and she was shown to come from, you know, a lower class background, not very educated, and she didn't understand a lot of the words that the mayor would use or Giles, or like she was always like, what? And then they'd have to dumb it down for her. And I also want to point out that Rhona is a black girl, right? She's a black actress. A part of me just needed to ask, are they doing the same thing to Rhona here? Like, are we supposed to assume she's coming from lower class, that she can't even understand something that was very clearly said by Molly? Like, she's never heard an accent before or something. Like, I thought this was a weird thing to put in here.
Yes, absolutely. And it's worse because she's black. It's, yeah. You know, there's the classist implications, which were also there with Faith. And now there's also this kind of racist hint that, you know, we should derive a little bit of humor from this less educated, less worldly black girl. You know, maybe she's coming from an impoverished urban background, right? Although you would think, like, if you're living in a larger city, you would be exposed to a diversity of accents. So the joke doesn't make sense, right? But it's also just like, there are implications there. I'm not even sure the writers thought it through. I don't know why I'm making excuses for them. I agree with you completely, Steph. And it's another example of how this show with its racialized characters seldom thinks through the implications of how they maneuver those characters in a cast that is otherwise predominantly white.
Yeah, great. I'm glad we pointed that out. Just something I noticed, and I'm sure it's not the last time we'll notice something about racism in this season, because, you know, down the pipeline, we might get other potential slayers from different parts of the world, right? So Buffy is telling Giles about the welcome committee. Xander says the First knows potentials are on their way. Giles says he has to warn the coven. Buffy says the First will always be one step ahead of us, Giles. I need to know how to stop it. No, not stop it. Hurt it. I want to hurt it real bad. Tell me how. And Giles says, I don't know, Buffy. I've exhausted all the sources I have left with little result. The Watcher's records are still all we have to go on. Anya says she made the rounds in the demon community. The ones that didn't attack her didn't know or didn't want to talk. Either way, we've got squat. Buffy asks about the Torkan, which is, of course, the vampire with a Y. We can't stake them. Stakes don't kill them. But anything in these ancient myths about what does? Sunlight, fire, germs? Andrew's listening in and says, so Giles, with that thing guarding the entrance to the First crib, how will Buffy get to Spike? And they all stare at him for interjecting himself. And Buffy's just like, I hate to admit this, but he's not wrong. And there's no way I'm going to help Spike until this thing is out of the way. And Giles says nothing to that. I assume it's because he's pissed, because he's like, why is this a priority? Sookie says, Spike? He's the vampire who's been killing people, right? He's the one you're worried about helping? And Buffy says, we need him too. He's the one that's been... It's complicated, Chloe. And the brunette says, I'm Chloe. She's Eve. And Eve says, we've been talking, and do we have some kind of plan? You know, any kind of plan to keep us from dying? And Buffy's like, we're working on it. So, listen... Buffy is my hero. Buffy is my leader. Buffy is my captain. Oh, captain. I do feel like this was a very weak answer. And I think sometimes, like, you know, they chatter a lot, these girls. They have a lot. They need to be checked because they don't have a lot of faith in Buffy. But when she answers their questions like this, I kind of get why they don't have the faith, you know, because they're like, can you explain to us why Spike, like why you're dedicating time to him when you don't even know how to protect us? And she's just kind of like, it's complicated, you know, and like later Dawn gives a perfectly sound explanation for why she has to save Spike. But Buffy can't give that for some reason. I think it just makes her look weaker as a leader. And I'm not saying she is. I'm just saying that's why I think these girls rebel a little bit against her.
No, absolutely. This is why I was going into this episode feeling like I wasn't going to like it and I was going to be harsh on it was, as you pointed out, it's a talky episode. And my memory of this episode is that not a lot gets accomplished here. It's a lot of talking. And then once the Turrican attacks later on, it's a lot of running. It's a lot of them being frightened and scared. And my memory of it is as a very downer episode. So the fact that I misremembered that and you know, that's not what's going on in this episode, that was actually a pleasant surprise to me.
So Giles says there's one Abby that we haven't tried yet, Beljoxis Eye. Anya says, I told you no. Buffy says, what is Botox Eye? And that takes me back to Kissing Toast.
The names that Buffy comes up with for things are just much better than the original names. I vote you call it Botox Eye for the rest of the
Okay, the yeah. So Giles says Botox Eye is an oracle-type creature that exists in Dark Dimension. Anya says internal vortex, more like. And Buffy's like, fun. Anya's like, not really. Giles says only demons can open the gateway to it. Anya says, excuse me, ex-demon. And Giles says, you're still friends in the fold, like you've got acquaintances. Anya says, there's no reason to think that the Botox Eye will have any of the answers you're looking for. And Buffy says, like, she'll take anything she can get. And Anya, please, we're running out of time. Spike's running out of time.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no.
Speaking of Spike, he's chained in a cave. Been there, done that, seen it before.
Again? Still?
He's got the symbols carved on his skin. He's still topless. A bringer shows up and tries to slice at him, but he uses his legs to grapple with the bringer. And then Spike breaks free and he runs away, but Buffy shows up and he stops. He smiles. He leans forward towards her, but psych, he's actually still chained up and this is all a dream.
Wow. Who could have guessed? Who could have predicted?
So Spike is hallucinating from the pain, from being, you know, addled. Who knows?
They tried to drown him a lot last episode, which didn't work because he doesn't breathe. So he's just tired from that. He's like, man.
Somebody should probably tell the First that.
When will they figure it out? When will the First learn?
You know, it really sucks that the First can't turn the pages on books. So the first is now standing in front of him as Buffy. Dreaming of me again, aren't you? Poor Spike. He still thinks I believe in him. Be realistic. I don't even believe in myself. Least, not enough to risk my skin to save your ass. Not enough to face that. And she's referring to the vampire with a Y who's standing in the corner, just kind of like recharging. You know, he's had a tough day. He's been really busy.
He's literally plugged in right now. He's getting his bars up before he goes.
I would have loved if the camera had panned over and he was just sitting in a lazy boy with a beer.
He's like, they're back in Spike's old crypt and he's just like commandeered his room.
He's playing kitchen poker with some of the bringers.
Clem's there. He's like, hey.
Why is Spike didn't see you over there? I miss Clem. So the first says, I'm sorry, Spike, but you need to accept this. You know it would never have worked out. It's time to let go so we can both move on. I promise, soon as all. But then Spike starts chanting, Buffy will come for him. He says, she will come for me. She will come for me. And he says it over and over and over. And the first reaches out to touch Spike and says, no, I won't. Ooh. I really liked the interaction in this scene, right? Like, I'm enjoying how the first is really good at getting under people's skin. And even if Spike is protesting and claiming that he believes that Buffy will come for him, I think that the first is sowing the seed of doubt here.
A demon is putting trash out behind his bar. And Anya and Giles are there. And he's telling Anya that she has some nerve to ask this of him. And Anya's like, Torg, that was a lifetime ago. And Torg's like, yeah, three, but who's counting? You broke my heart on Yonka. And Anya's like, don't be so dramatic. You don't even have a heart. Six spleens, two stomachs, half a brain, maybe, but no heart. And Torg's like, don't mock this. The night we spent together was important to me. And Anya says, it was one date. It wasn't even a date. We happened to be invited to the same massacre. And you hit on me after I had a few. And Torg's like, I remember you wore pink. And Anya says, those were entrails. Torg, if you open this tiny little gateway to the Botox eye for me, I'll have sex with you again. And Torg is like, ugh, please, you're human. The way you look now, I wouldn't touch you for all the kittens in Korea.
And so this is the second week now. Not second week in a row, but, you know, Spike turns down Anya. Torg turns down Anya. This poor girl can't get it. And I feel bad for her because my understanding is Anya's reasonably attractive, but I guess not by demon standards anymore.
I guess not. And she gets so upset about it, right? She's like, you're rejecting my offer of sexual bribery? What am I, a leper in this town? I can't even give it away. And Torg is like, come back when you are a leper. As he goes to leave, Giles threatens him, says like, I'll send the slayer over here to kill all your clientele and burn your establishment to the ground. So Torg just stares and then he cuts his hand on his own hand because there's a little sharp little horn on it. And then he throws the blood into the air and he speaks a demon language and a portal opens up. And then he's like, there's your stinking gateway on Yonka. Don't let it hit you on the way out. And Anya asks Giles, like, is it my hair? It's not attractive. And this is also, just as you said, like, Anya threw herself at a different demon recently. No luck. Anya has changed her hair more on this show than anybody else and accused Spike of not liking her hair. And now she's also saying again, like, is my hair not attractive? So Anya clearly has a lot of insecurity around her hair.
Yeah. I'll just really quickly bring up a hot steak that we received a while back and I was going to work in at some point, which is from Chiz, who had an alternative take on Anya's behavior in Sleeper. And when Spike rejects her and she's like, is it because I'm fat? You know, you and I were talking about how that could be a sign of insecurity, sign of that internalized fat phobia, especially, you know, in that era. But Chiz's take was that maybe Anya was just trying to distract Spike. Maybe this was just another strategy of hers of kind of, you know, shifting that moment and, you know, shifting the blame onto him. And I mean, I think that's an interesting take, but I think that this scene here is kind of building more on top of our theory that this is an insecurity for her. I think Anya genuinely worries about her appearance. She worries about her attractiveness. I think especially now that she's mortal again and she's trying to, you know, figure her life out because she doesn't have Xander anymore. I can only imagine that there's a lot going on in her head and in her life right now.
And the fact that she's also worried about aging, right? And like, you know, as women in society, God forbid you get over 30 and then all of a sudden you're just like,
and you're not right? taken yet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She's damaged goods now.
So lots going on.
Xander Harris didn't want her.
God, to think that that's your bar. So Giles and her jump through the portal and it's dark and windy inside. Giles is like, where's the Botox eye? And then the eye says, here. And they walk toward it. And it is indeed, Kara, a big penis eye in a cage because it's got a penis.
This background. Is the bondage dimension.
That's why Anya didn't want to go. She's hooked up with this eye before.
So a couple of thoughts. First off, Torg, what the fuck, dude? Like, if it's that easy to open the portal, just do it so that she goes away.
Right?
Like, that didn't... This whole scene felt very unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree.
Secondly, I don't know about you, Steph. I thought that Giles' threat to Torg was a little bit weak sauce. You know, like when Giles has taken his glasses off for us before and we've seen the Ripper underneath, he's usually much better at being threatening. Like, remember that time he threatened Snyder if Snyder didn't let Buffy back into school?
Yeah.
That was chilling.
Yeah.
This is just kind of like, I'm going to send the Slayer around to be mean to you. You better do it all on, or I'm going to stick the Slayer on you.
If you don't do it, I'm going to call Mom.
Giles, grab this guy and ram him against the alleyway wall. Like, let's do this thing.
Maybe he's just really aware that him and Anya are human, and the demon's a demon still. He's got sharp hands. I love to see Giles and Anya back together, working side by side. We have always said, and by always, I mean since last season, that Giles and Anya, they should be endgame because their chemistry is off the charts. They had the best kiss of the series. Oh, now's the time. All right, let's cut to Willow, who is answering the phone at the home, and she's like, oh, it's Althenia of the Coven, I guess. And then she's getting news from this from the Coven.
Althenia.
Cut to Xander untying Andrew. Buffy says, okay, listen up, Andrew. I don't exactly know what to do with you, except we don't have time to babysit a hostage. Xander's like, especially a hostage that's getting more than a little ripe. And Buffy makes a face, steps away from him, and then she says, I'm here to tell you, you try anything, you try to run, you ever see the movie Misery? And Andrew's like, six times. But the book was scarier than the movie because instead of crushing his foot with a sledgehammer, Kathy Bates chops off, and then he like stops and he stares at Buffy, who's like looking at him like, yeah. And he's like, I'll be good. And then Willow comes in, says another potential has arrived in town the day before yesterday at the Sunspot Hotel near the highway. Bringers killed her watcher before you could tell anyone that they sent her. But if it wasn't for a particularly powerful seer in the coven, we wouldn't even know about it now. And Buffy notes the time and says, okay, there's still a couple hours before daylight left. You guys should be safe here. I'll go get her and bring her back. Xander goes with her. Dawn comes in and asks Willow where they're going. Willow says, they're getting a potential. Dawn's like, there's more. And Willow's like, the more potentials, the better. We need all the help we can get. And Dawn throws down some truths and she says, help, sure, that's cool. But just not sure more scared Slayer wannabes translates as help.
I'm so glad that you flagged that because I also flagged this in my notes. And Donathan has been dropping truth bombs a lot this season, and they just keep coming this episode.
Yes.
So yes, this is harsh, Donald. It is harsh but fair.
Dawn is calling it as she sees it, and you and I can give no higher praise than that. All right. So let's go downstairs. The potentials are all in the basement. Looks like they're like training, but they're just like kind of playing around with weapons, stretching, boxing, whatever. Eve is asking, what are we all doing here? And Kennedy says, training. Didn't your watcher ever teach you the word? Rona says, I never had a watcher. I only just found out what I was or what I might be after those crazy ass monks came after me. So again, I think I posed this in the last episode, but like some of these potentials have watchers. Some have been training like Kennedy since they were like 8 years old, except Kennedy also lives in a giant mansion in the Hamptons and elsewhere. Like, there's no consistency. Like, some do, some don't, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the mythos has established that the Watchers' Council tries to locate all the potentials, but it's hard. they probably have seers like Elthania who kind of scry or scan for signs of potentials. I don't know exactly how that works. And when they find a potential, they dispatch a watcher. But there will always be potentials who slip through that net, like Buffy did at first, right? And so it's interesting to me how the show is showing us that diversity of where Slayers are coming from. There probably is also a discriminatory aspect where, depending on where you grow up in the world and your situation, it might be the case that the Watchers Council also just kind of cares less, you know? Like, yes, Kendra was a Black Slayer, but she came from Jamaica where her family kind of knew what was going on, right? Like, they knew about vampires. This was an honor. She was kind of given up for training. So there was a strong tradition of obeying the authority of the Watchers Council. Whereas maybe the Watchers Council knew about Rona, but was just kind of like, we're not going to bother.
Yeah. I mean, I do find it interesting information, you know, like I do like the potentials being here for the moment, because like, I think it's fascinating to dive a little bit more into the Slayer lore, you know, when like, kind of figure
I
out
wish they
how
had
things
done this
work.
In season 5.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of my complaints about season 7 is, sure, we get more Slayer mythology in this season, but it's the final season of the show.
Yeah, I know. Molly, you say we need to keep our reflexes sharp, and Kennedy says we have to be ready if something goes down. Chloe's like, something's already gone down. Eve says, and what are we supposed to do about it? I've never seen a real vampire in my whole life, much less slay one. And the redhead says, her watcher showed her a photograph of one, a blurry photograph. Eve says, that's not what I'm saying. Not one of us is remotely prepared to be activated as the new chosen one. Kennedy says she feels prepared. Rona says, asks if a Slayer dies. Eve says, when the Slayer dies. Nobody lives forever, right? Rona says, okay, then one of us gets activated. Molly says, I prefer the word called. So the redhead says that she's heard there's another Slayer somewhere, and Molly's like, that doesn't make sense. So Eve says, none of this does. No matter how many there are, one of us is going to be next, the next Slayer with the weight of the world on her shoulders. Chloe's like, it won't be me. Not now. I'm too young. And Kennedy says, it doesn't work that way. In fact, the younger, the better. I'm starting to think it's too late for me. Eve says, it's never too late. It could be anyone, especially since there are so few of us left. They'll run through each one of us, one after the other. Kind of creepy, huh? All we do is wait around for each other to die. So I have a couple questions. All right. How old is Kennedy?
That is a good question.
How old is she?
Old enough for Willow, we hope.
We don't know that. Because my idea of Slayers is that they're all between 15 and 18. Because they have to be young. Like, I think Chloe appears, if I were to guess, you know what, I'm just going to guess. I think Chloe looks the youngest to me. She's probably 15. And then I want to believe in Kennedy and the way she hits on Willow. So I'm going to say Kennedy's 19.
I mean, yeah, I'm really bad at judging people's ages. So.
Yeah. And then the other girls are all 16 and 17. Like, that's my guess. I think Chloe's the youngest. Kennedy's by far the oldest, but not by much. So if I feel like if Willow is probably 22 right now. So like, I really hope Kennedy is somewhere in that range, you know?
Just like we are always asking, what time is it? We also always ask, how old are these people?
How old are you, really? Okay, also, Eve says it doesn't matter, like anyone can be called. So my question is, Kara, why can't women who were potentials when they are younger, sure, like, but from other generations, right? Before Buffy, like, so why can't women in their 40s and 50s also be potentials? They still have the potential, no?
Because Joss Whedon doesn't think they're nubile enough.
I know I set you up for that answer, but like, I didn't want to hear it. I needed to hear it, but I also didn't want to hear it.
Well, I don't want to hear about vampire dick and bite sex, yet here we are.
Just saying, how sick would it be if all of a sudden, like, this, like, Joy Summers is like, I'm called, finally. That'd be but, sick.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And yeah. I think having an older Slayer would be wonderful. But whatever in-universe explanation somebody decides to come up with, the real answer is ageism, right? It's
yes.
Shows about teenage girls, shows with young, nubile actors do
it.
Better than a show helmed by a woman in her 40s, unfortunately. That's the way
like,
it is.
Slayer in her 40s would fucking get shit done. You know, like, and she'd be home to fucking make herself a healthy dinner.
My only thing about Joyce becoming a Slayer being called, right, is it would mean Buffy would have to be dead, and that would be really tragic. So I don't want that.
Absolutely.
To happen,
or like anyone in Joyce's book club, you know, like it'd be cool to see. So the fact that they're like, anyone can get called at any time.
Can you imagine if when Buffy dies in Prophecy Girl, Joyce gets called, and then of course Xander brings Buffy back to life, and so
mother, now Buffy, daughter,
and Joyce. Yes, would that not something?
Oh, Summer's sisters,
Summer Slayers.
Oh, and then that's how Spike falls in love with Joyce. It's just all coming together because like they become mortal enemies, all enemies to lovers. I get it. I love it. I love it so much. Someone write it, please.
So we cut to Buffy and Xander getting to the hotel. Xander's checking the window. Buffy knocks. She says, "Hey, we're friendly and we have eyes." It's good that you're announcing Buffy. That. Because the Briggers are, of course, a very chatty bunch. So we were worried at that point. Then Xander says, "Buffy, kick the door down." Buffy does. Go, Buffy. Mm-hmm. And they find the body of a girl who's been dead for days. Ew, that would smell at that point.
Yeah, she's looking pretty good for someone who's been dead for days, you know.
Well, and also, has nobody from this hotel like discovered the body yet? Like, you would think that if was it paid up for the whole week, right? Or would nobody come around and be like, "Hey, pay us more"? I don't know what's going on in Sunnydale. Mm-hmm. There's just dead bodies everywhere. This town is just so fucking chill when it comes to death. And then when they investigate further, they realize the dead body is that of Eve, the Southern blonde Sookie Stackhouse Slayer.
And isn't it so funny that it's like, oh, her name is Eve because of the first, right? Biblically, mm-hmm. Eve was the first woman. Mm-hmm. We should have known from the very beginning.
So as they are making this discovery in the basement, Eve is sitting in a circle and saying to the other potentials, "Just my personal opinion, but I don't think the Slayer can protect us from the first." I mean, she'd know since she is the first. Dun, dun, dun. And this is a fantastic reveal. I did remember this reveal. I didn't forget this part. But I really like how the show is trying to take advantage of the lore that we've been slowly uncovering about the first. So we've long known that the first can take the form of any dead person. We also know the first can't be corporeal. So now, you know, you're running back in your head. You're like, wait a minute. Did I ever see Eve touch anything? What's going on? How did she manage this in a house full of girls? Something I have learned long before I transitioned, but especially since I've transitioned, is girls tend to do a lot more touching of each other. Yeah. I do not like. But like, how did she get away with that?
I think it's true evil. This is how we know that it was truly the first in Eve's image, is that to make her ruse believable, she would have had to use the bathroom, like go to the bathroom or like pretend to shower or whatever. Like, I gotta go use the bathroom. So she's taking precious bathroom time away from one of these actual living people that need it in a house with only one bathroom and like 15 people. Like, that is truly evil.
you are correct. I also want to point out that this also means that the first has had to hang around with a bunch of teenage girls for like 2 days.
Yeah.
So, counterpoint, Steph. Maybe if the first wasn't evil before now, it would have been driven to be evil by this point.
That's not very fair. I would love to hang out with these teenage girls. They're probably having the best chats, you know?
Oh, dear. Also, Eve has somehow managed to pretend to eat.
It's like, have you ever seen the movie Casper? When the uncles eat their food, it just falls right out of the and she just like kicks it aside.
She's avoided touching, like nobody's ever gone to hand her something. It's just gone right through her. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if there's like a perception filter going on where it's like she's able to bend reality just enough that you don't think about handing something to her. if that makes sense.
I just don't think these girls pay attention, right? They're scared. They're in a new environment. They're like training. I put that in quotes. So like they're probably just not paying attention, right? And this girl like chats so much, they probably avoid her. So, oh, I love the scene for Dawn. Dawn is in the living room as Andrew says, "How come the Slayer is always a girl?" And Dawn is saying, "I don't know, because girls are cooler." Exactly, Donifer. Andrew says, "I think a guy Slayer would be a badass. If there was like a ninja, the guy Slayer would be like, you may be silent, but this will shut you up." And Dawn says, "Buffy could stomp ninja ass." And Andrew says, "The silent warrior? I think not. She can't even slay that special vampire," everyone's saying. And Dawn gets so defensive. I fucking love this. She's like, well, everyone should shut up. I love that Dawn is so protective of Buffy here. It's so good. She says, you should stop pretending that anyone here is your friend. Andrew says, why is she so about saving Spike? He's a worse killer than me by a way lot. And Dawn says, Spike was being controlled by the First and he has a soul now. Besides, we'll need his help. See, Buffy? You see how easy it is to just say that? It's ooh, why does this bug me so much? I think it's because when she's like, I can't explain why I need to save Spike. It's because, again, they're like alluding to these feelings. And I'm like, okay, but like, this is a much more sound, normal answer. So rant over. Andrew says, what about me? Did it ever occur to anyone that I could be a whole lot more useful around here? I used to be an evil genius, hello. And Dawn says, what was your genius thing? Andrew says, raising demons mostly. Also, there was planning. There were blueprints. I can be in this. Kicking it righteous. Oh yeah. And Dawn says, Buffy said if you talked enough, I'm allowed to kill you.
I love that. I love imagining that conversation between Buffy and Dawn.
Andrew's like, not even. Dawn's like, even. Andrew's like, license to kill, huh? Pretty cool. And you can see Dawn smile, like, or smirk leave her face, because she's like, oh my god, nothing phases this guy. Because he goes off onto like a rant about Timothy Dalton and like James Bond and like whatever. And this is a carryover, by the way, from season 6, because remember in season 6, Andrew also said that Timothy Dalton was his favorite James Bond. So Dawn says, is there a language that you're speaking? And Andrew sits on the couch and pouts and says, I'm so alone. And Dawn says, then maybe you shouldn't have killed your only friend.
Oh, snap. Dawn Becca with the harsh but fair truth bomb again, because, oh my God, I could not have said that better. And I am so happy the writers gave Dawn that line. Like, Dawn is fast becoming one of my favorite characters this season.
That was good. That was, like, put him in his place, Dawn. Especially, like, the conversation started off with something that would have annoyed me had I been in the conversation, right? Like, why is it a girl? Why couldn't a boy do it? Boys would be a pretty cool slayer. It's like, shut the fuck up. It's girls, and that's why. Like, you misogynist.
Yes, like, you know that if Andrew were around, and we said this in season 6, if Andrew were around now, he'd be an incel on the internet, and he'd be going into people's replies on social media with these exact same sophistry and arguments and all these things that, you know, aren't in good faith. I also have to ask, like, Andrew, what did you expect? You remember high school. You remember how mean teenage girls must have been to you in particular in high school. And now you're talking to a teenage girl. So of course she's going to turn the full might of her attitude on you and deliver a withering insult. You just walked into this one, buddy.
Right. And it's not even like an insult, it's just a truth. She says, stop pretending we're your friends. And then she says, you shouldn't have killed your only friend. Like, I don't feel bad for you that you're lonely. That's on you.
Truth bombs are the most powerful weapon in a teenage girl's arsenal.
Exactly.
You have not lived until you've had a teenage girl insult your outfit and she's right.
You're like, oh god. So Dawn goes to leave, and Andrew is saying, I hate that. You don't even know. And Dawn says, I don't plan to. And Andrew says, the Slayer's not getting it done. I've got my ear to the ground, and that's the word. And Dawn just leaves, right? Because he's not even making sense anymore. And then he just lies down and sulks on the couch because no one wants to play with him. So that's when Buffy runs in, alarming Willow and Dawn. Andrew, she sees Andrew on the couch and he takes his shoes off the couch and like dusts it off. So she runs downstairs. But at first, Kara, it looked to me like Xander wasn't with her. I mean, he is with her in the next scene. But like, if for a second, I was like, Buffy came alone. That means she must have did her Slayer leap. And then that gets her 5 minutes ahead of him. to get home.
No, she just ran faster. Well, but you have to think, like, I assume Xander drove. But you have to think, like, if he hadn't driven, right, like, and they were rushing back to the house, Buffy would have been really pissed that she had to, like, keep pace with Xander. So
she runs downstairs, followed by the Scoobies. She shouts, "Get away from them," because all the girls are in a circle downstairs talking. Eve's like, "What's the problem, officer?" And Buffy says, "I said get away from them now." And Dawn's like, "Buffy, what did Eve do?" And Xander's like, "It's not Eve." And Buffy says, "Eve's dead." And all the potentials stand up, and Eve's like, "Oops, one more down. Oh well, can't save them all, can you, Buffy? Thanks for the slumber party, girls. It's been real fun these past couple nights. I learned a whole lot." And Buffy's like, "Shut up and get out." And Eve's like, "Or you'll do what? I'll be sending a guest over to visit y'all later tonight, after the sun goes down, of course. Try to make him feel welcome before he rips y'all to pieces. Bye." And then she like flashes away. And Andrew's like, "I need to go wash up again." He runs back upstairs. I liked this scene. I don't know how I feel about this Southern actress, but overall, I love how Buffy's just like, "Get the fuck out of here," right? And the first is like, "I've been had, but like, it's time to go anyway. I learned everything I needed to know. I like planted the seeds I needed to plant. I did Inception, and now I'm out of here because I'm evil and badass."
I mean, the first is a lot more likable when she's in girl boss mode versus being like, you know, in Spike mode.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, I like a gender fluid baddie, but you know.
Yeah, it's true.
So we are back in the land of Botox Eye.
Nice.
And Botox Eye says with its deep voice, and I didn't like Botox Eye because it's actually, when you look at it, it's actually like lots of eyes, and I have a thing for lots of eyes. I can't do it.
I thought it looked pretty cool. I think it looks good for like prop wise, you know.
So Botox Eye says in deep voiceover voice, "It cannot be fought. It cannot be killed. The first evil has been and always will be. Since before the universe was born, long after there is nothing else, it will go on." So Giles says, "I refuse to believe that." "Why did you come here, Giles?" He says, "There must be some way to destroy it." And Botox Eye says, "Am I talking to myself here? There's no way." And I liked the change in tone. And the eye kind of discarding its little persona and being like, "Come on, dude.
Yeah, come on, I'm talking to myself.
I'm all seeing eye here. Have you seen how many eyes I have? I got a lot of eyes. I see everything. I know what you do at night, Giles."
Oh, what does he do? I wish I had the eye.
Anya says, "Okay, we tried. Let's go, Giles." Giles says, "Are you saying the first will succeed in wiping out the line of Slayers?" Botox Eye says, "The eye sees not the future, only the truth of the now and before." Anya says, "We've all got that. It's called memory." I fucking love you, like, Anya.
Okay, but we never figured out why Anya didn't want to go see the eye. Is it just because she gets annoyed by it? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem to be dangerous.
She slept with it.
Oh, yeah, you're right, I forgot.
Clearly. And Giles says, "If the first has been around for all time, then why hasn't it attempted something like this before? Why now?" Now, that is a good question, Giles. Mm-hmm. Botox Eye says, "The opportunity has only recently presented itself. The mystical forces surrounding the chosen line have become irrevocably altered, become unstable, vulnerable. The first evil did not cause the disruption, only seized upon it to extinguish the lines of the chosen forever." And Giles says, "What has caused the disruption? What is responsible for letting this happen?" Zoom in on the eye. As it says, "The Slayer." Dun, dun, dun.
Bum. Okay, so the Scoobies and the Potentials and Dawn, they're all sitting at the dining room table. So the girls are basically saying, like, "We should run for it," right? And they're like, "Well, where will we go? Annabelle ran. Look what happened to her." Buffy tells them it's safer in than out. Molly's like, "It was here, Buffy, in the house, living with us for days." Chloe says, "You didn't even know it." I was like, "Whoa, Chloe, calm down." And Xander basically says, "None of us knew it. You know, they're like, it could be any one of us." Willow says it only takes the form of dead people. So I think that this house needs to do immediately is set up a new system. Every time you approach somebody, tap them on the shoulder. Just do it.
Like, it's very so easy to defeat this.
Yes.
You know, like, so Eve shows up to this house. Does she not have a bag? Does she not have just clothes?
She must have just shown up at the door, right? But how does she knock? There's so many questions. Oh, yeah. Man, this first is conniving. So Rona says there will be plenty more of dead people soon enough, dropping like flies here. So these girls are getting super, super weirded out and scared. Everyone starts arguing. Buffy says, I know you're all scared. I am too. Giles and Anya will be back soon, and hopefully they'll have all the information we need to stop the first. Buffy, that is very optimistic. She says, in the meantime, we need to stick together. We're stronger that way. We cannot afford to fall apart now. And Andrew says, she's right. Where would the Justice League have been if they hadn't put their differences aside to stop the Imperium and a shape-shifting alien horde? This is so funny. Buffy's just like, don't help me.
Yes, I agree with Buffy here.
Even if it's relevant, don't help. So Xander says the sun's going down, the Uber vamp's on its way. I think you mean vampire with a Y, Xander. Plan B is good right now. And Buffy says, Willow, I'm sorry to ask this, but we need a barrier, a major one. Something tells you the vampire with a Y doesn't need an invite to get into the house. So can you do it? Willow says, I'll try. Rhoda's like, try? And Kennedy's like, you heard her. And Xander asks Buffy if she's sure about Willow doing the magic, because last time it all blew up in everyone's face. And Buffy's like, we don't have very many choices. Chloe says, well, what if it gets through? And Buffy says, we'll deal. So they don't like that, right? Rona's like, you fight, you mean? How are we supposed to do that? And with what? And Kennedy says, whatever it takes, right? And she directs that question back to Buffy. And they all collectively, like, basically just start freaking out, right? They're like, Buffy can't kill it. Like, no one could. Like, she staked it and didn't die. Maybe it can't die. What can we do? We should surrender to it. Like, so they're all, like, talking amongst themselves. As they're talking, Buffy and Willow are exchanging looks. They both get up to leave the room. As they pass Xander, he goes, what? And then he follows the girls out. And then the three of them are standing in the kitchen listening. They appear to be listening to the arguing that's happening in the other room as they stare stoically at each other. Again, I totally get why people would find the potentials annoying, right? Like, their lack of faith, they're questioning the plan, all this stuff, except for Kennedy. You notice Kennedy has been the person who's like, that's the plan. Stop complaining. Start training. And I kind of like that for Kennedy. I like that she immediately has Buffy's back and Willow's back. Like, she kind of falls in line pretty quickly.
I don't know. I think Kennedy's confidence is a bit of a front. I think she's just compensating. I think that she's really terrified, right? She's out of her element. We already know that she's had a bit more of a privileged life. I think she's really, really scared. This is just her way of dealing.
Yeah, that's fair. But I'm saying it's at least it's better than what the other girls are doing. Because again, they're doing that thing that I hate, Kara, where that's the plan. Complain, complain, complain. Rip apart the plan. Offer nothing up to replace the plan.
They're teenage girls.
Yeah, but like adults do that too. So I'm just like, this is where I get...
What do we expect young women to be more emotionally mature and developed than adults who do the same thing? I agree that it's annoying, right? Like, I agree with what you're saying, but
I'm saying I get why people find that annoying, but I understand it. Like, I'm basically saying what you're saying. Like, I understand why they are doing it. They're scared, but I'm also commending Kennedy, who probably is also very scared, but at least she's not doing that. You know, like, at the very least, she's just like, this is the plan. Like, I get it, right? Like, this is what we're doing. I trust you. And I appreciate that about Kennedy.
Kennedy has made a choice to be more on board with the program than the other potentials have so far. And I wish the show had spent a bit more time in this episode giving us more information about these potentials, including Kennedy, and helping us understand their psychologies a bit better so we understood where they're coming from. As it is, you know, they're really kind of just leaning hard on us having to infer a lot about their characters based on how they're all freaking out right now. And like you said, Kennedy's not, so she is different. Again, this is one of the reasons why my memory of this episode was less favorable than I thought the episode actually turned out being, because what I remember from this episode is how jumbled it feels. It's like everybody's upset with Buffy, everybody's freaking out, but it's all just kind of like surface level.
Yeah. And I think, again, like I know I've heard a lot of chatter in the fandom about how the potentials annoy them. And I was expecting to feel that in this episode, but like what we're saying, I kind of understand where they're coming from. And again, when Buffy just says, we'll deal, and then pandemonium breaks out after that, like, fair enough. Honestly, like, if they're just like, how are you protecting us? Buffy's like, well, if that doesn't work, we'll just deal with it. And it's like, that's not an actual plan. You know what I mean? So in one way, I'm like, I don't like when people are just like, don't like that plan, and then don't offer up their own plan. Again, they're young. I get it. But at the same time, it is pretty scary to be like, literally tonight, something's coming to attack us, something that beat you up pretty bad, the Slayer, and all you say is, we'll deal, right? Because they are not used to the way that the Scoobies work. They're not used to this type of life or death situation. So it's pretty understandable why they're doing what they're doing. So it's sunset. The first, as Eve is saying, the time has come for all the good children to say goodnight. Take them all except for her. And the vampire with a Y leaves, and then she's alone again. So she morphs back into Buffy and she's like, I guess I'll have you all to myself, Spike. Bringers are standing outside the house. Dawn is watching them through the window and she points this out. Buffy says they're not attacking us because they don't want to come in. They just want to make sure we don't get out, which is so funny because later, like, everyone gets out. So she's handing out weapons to the potential. Rona is saying this will do anything. What's the point? And Kennedy says, it's this end right here. Stick it in the bad guys. Any more questions? That's a really good line from Kennedy. But again, can I just point out how interesting it is that they're giving Rona, who obviously is the new girl in this situation, right? Everyone else has been here for at least a day longer than her. But she is the one that is fighting against the plan so hard. And I'm afraid that they're giving her that stereotypical angry black woman trope show, and then having Kennedy talk down to her. Kennedy, who has already proven that she's from a higher class, right? And we know that the actress herself is Latina, but in the show, I believe Kennedy is just rich and white.
Yeah, no, I haven't read up enough on that, but I think I remember we were talking with Ian briefly about this.
Yes, in the Phantom on Trial. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was interesting. I mean, as we've discussed many times on the show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, not very aware of racial dynamics at the best of times. So I'm not surprised that the writers are doing this. And I completely agree that we should be calling that out.
Yes. So Kennedy takes the crossbow, right? She says she's been using it since she was 8. Andrew asks for something. And he's like, the vampire with a Y is coming for me too. And I have a right to defend myself, if you say so. And Buffy gives him holy water. And he actually acts like that's like a really important thing. He puts it to his chest. She's like, thank you. So Willow is floating a glowy ball. And she's like, I'm facing my fear. I'm facing my fear. Hear that fear? I'm facing you. And Kennedy finds her doing that. And she's like, hey, I heard that once you turn into the big scary, like big scary Willow, that's something I'd almost like to see. And Willow says, no, you wouldn't. And Kennedy says, I said almost. Willow says, last time I tried using magic, the first turned it around on me. Got inside. I felt it just surging through me in every fiber of my being. Pure, undiluted evil. I could taste it. And Kennedy's like, how does evil taste? And Willow's like, kind of chalky. So Dawn's like, something's happening. And sure enough, the vampire with a Y has shown up. And we know because it's going, rawr, rawr. It can't speak English. So it's just like, I'm here. Are you guys ready? It's showtime.
Are we going to do this? I wish that the vampire with a Y had used the traditional method of calling up the Slayer to fight, which is to throw a note wrapped around a rock through the window with little hearts over the eyes.
And it says, Slayer, come out and die. Face me and die.
And you know that if the first wanted to, it could have told the vampire with a Y to do that, because the first has Harmony's memories since she's dead. Although now I have a new question. So the first has the memories of dead people, but vampires are undead. So I totally get that the first can take the forms of vampires because they've died. Does the first have all of a vampire's memories, or only all of their memories before they died?
Great question.
Because if it has all of their memories, does it like always have, like, is the first just spying on everybody through the eyes of every vampire because its memories are constantly updating every second? Or
It have their memories at all, or does it just like, is it always just the first personality, but the first is like an acting student and it's just taking on the people as he thinks it is.
I think we established in the last episode, I think that was something that Giles had said, was the first has the memories of the dead. Okay. They can impersonate anybody who's died. And that makes sense until you start thinking about the fact that some of these dead people, like, because it's impersonating Buffy, right? And Buffy's come back. So does it only have Buffy's memories up until she died?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I'd imagine maybe once you're dead, and whether you're undead or not, or you come back or whatever, like that your memories are mine. But that technically means that, you know, the first would be doing that to Buffy since the end of season one, because she died then.
This is very confusing.
What a power.
Second question. Third question. I've lost count. I have many questions. About the vampire with a Y showing up here outside the Summers residence. What night is it? Is nobody else home in this neighborhood?
It's New Year's Eve. It's true. Okay, but yeah, we don't want to talk about the neighbors ever, because the amount of times that this house has literally been trashed, like literally a couple nights ago, every window got broken, and like the neighbors aren't like, oh shit, is there another like demon gang like tearing up Sunnydale? Is it just the neighbor?
They're like, it's a white boy gang again, right? Because it's a bunch of white boys in robes and a very pale white boy with a skin condition.
Yeah, so. The vampire's out there declaring that it's there in its own language. Buffy says, here it comes. It bashes down the door and everyone is standing in the living room, and Willow's trying to cast a spell to keep it out. But the vampire is very powerful and it's punching it, the shield. And Willow's like, it's so strong. She's struggling and she can't hold it. So Buffy tells everybody to run. They all go out into the backyard. And like, again, why are the bringers there? Like only like one comes out or two come out on attack. Kennedy kills one with a crossbow. Xander starts fighting with one of them while the girls run away. Buffy comes and saves Xander's life by murdering this bringer. So another, like, what is this, like 11? Like another dead bringer body on the property somewhere. So Buffy runs out and the Uber vamp follows them.
Anya and Giles have returned from their excursion to the bondage dimension. They emerge out of the portal, and I don't know how they got back here. I don't know if the Botox eye can open portals from its side, or if, you know, Anya had to, like, summon Torg somehow.
Anya slept with the eye, and then it opened up the portal for her. It finally worked.
I don't know. I feel like the eye might be like, nobody wants to sleep with you.
That's why Anya's hair is so, like, windswept. It's not because of the vortex. It's because she had to bang it.
Steph speaks the truth. I can't argue with that. All right, good job. So Anya says, I don't understand how Buffy's death mucked up the whole Slayer mojo. It's not like she hasn't died before. And Giles says, it's not because she died. The Botox eye was clear about that in its enigmatic way. It's because she lives again. Buffy's not responsible for that. And then the penny drops. And Anya says, oh, no. Willow and me and Xander and Tara, we're the ones who brought Buffy back. We're the reason the first is here. The reason those girls were murdered. It's our fault. The world would have been better off if Buffy had just stayed dead.
Mm.
And Steph, this is a sobering realization for Anya, but also like this is a heavy thing for the show to drop in this tiny scene that's like lost in the sea of the rest of this episode.
Yeah, this like realization.
So I was like, by the way, this is because Willow messed with the natural order of things. But Willow's not privy to that yet. I assume they're going to tell her at some point and she's going to have a big guilt spiral like she always does. But, you know, Giles could say you rank arrogant amateur again.
Ooh. Well, I don't know, because last time when she found out that Buffy was ripped out of heaven, she was kind of just like, oh, really? Oh, let me magic that away. So I would like to see if she has grown from last season and will actually feel bad about what has happened. So the group is running down the street. Buffy says it's time to split up. She tells Willow to take everyone to a safe location. Xander says he knows a place. Buffy says she'll slow the vampire with a Y down and lead him away from you guys. Kennedy offers to stay behind, and Buffy's like, nope. And she takes Andrew's holy water, and then she tells everyone to go. Dawn tries to stay behind, but Xander pulls her away. Buffy runs, and she does a jump kick on the Uber vamp, but nothing happens. She smashes to the ground. So then she takes the holy water and smashes it on the vampire with a wise face, and it does impact it, like obviously it burns it, and then it throws Buffy into a car and she runs away, but it doesn't follow her. Buffy looks around her and it's gone. So the group has made it to a construction site. Andrew is complaining to Xander that he says it's no wonder Buffy's the leader, and Chloe is mumbling to herself. She's like, some leader, this is crazy. Ron and her are very super skeptical about this plan. Xander says this is the future site of the public library opening up in May 2003 if I ever get back to work. So Is Xander not working?
Yes, like, what fuck is Xander doing? You can't just not show up to work on a construction site, right, what? Steph?
No, you can't. You'll get fired. Also, when did this happen?
Well, it's been either 3 days or several weeks at this point, depending on what chronology we're following. Has Buffy gone back to work again, or was it just the one day?
What? I was like, what do you mean if you ever go back to work? Okay. Also, Xander, I thought you were building the gym at the school. Like, it's very unusual for you to be running two projects at once. He's an everyday man. He's like the best construction manager in the world. He's running multiple sites. So the potentials all hate the plan and the location, and they let them know. And Willow tells everyone to spread out and take positions and don't make a sound. And Ronald's like, that's the plan. That thing is going to kill Buffy, and then it's going to come for us. For all we know, it's killing her right now. And Kennedy says, or it could just skip that part and come straight to us. Because, Kara, the vampire with a Y knows how to make an entrance. And it is now standing amongst the girls and saying, rawr.
It's just like, yeah, me too.
Yeah, same.
The vampire with a Y just wants to be one of the girlies. It's very misunderstood.
Or maybe he's just like, can I join your side? I want to be on the side of good, but no one can understand me. They keep running away.
I'm looking for Lloyd. I hear he gives out souls.
You guys have to help Spike. You guys have to help Spike right now.
Spike got a soul. How hard could it be?
In the 4 weeks that Spike has been in that cave, him and this vampire with a Y fell in love. Hashtag Spike with a Y. New ship. Okay. So yeah. Oh no! It followed them there, and the potentials are all bracing themselves. But then lights turn on, spotlights, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer is standing behind them on the platform with her arms crossed. She didn't say anything. Like, what an entrance. Willow just says, okay, watch. Just watch. It's showtime. And they all climb up the scaffolding.
None of them are wearing protective safety gear.
Don't even get me started. I guess Xander doesn't care because he doesn't work there anymore. So he's like, get a nail in your shoe. What do I? I don't give a shit. Buffy tells the vampire with a Y, looks good, doesn't it? They're all trapped in here, terrified, meat for the beast, and there's nothing they can do but wait. Then, Kara, she flippy-doos off the platform into the pit.
Iconic. Was that not one of the best flippy-doos we've seen for a while?
It's possibly the best one. I mean, this is actually rivaled with the flippy-doo she unnecessarily did in the unaired pilot. Remember she was like, Giles, I gotta go to class. And she just like flippy-doos off the library balcony. Well,
she's a cheerleader.
This is great.
Right? Like, this is her thing.
Yeah.
And this is great. It's been a while since we've had a really good flippy-doo. So, like, we were due.
Usually her flippy-doos are while she's fighting and preoccupied. This was like a premeditated flip. She was like, all that's on me. Look what I can do, you potentials.
Ready? Let's go. Like I said, it's iconic. I am here for it. I felt that flippy-doo in my soul.
Ready? Okay. So that's all they've been doing for days, waiting to be picked off, having nightmares about monsters that can't be killed. But I don't believe in that. I always find a way. I'm the thing the monsters have nightmares about. And right now, you and me are going to show them why. It's time. Welcome to Thunderdome. And Andrew's like, two men enter, one man leaves. So they start to fight, Buffy and the vampire with a Y. And Buffy gets hit many times as the Scoobies are all pacing around and watching. Dawn says, this, you planned this, letting the barrier fail, bringing us here, you and Buffy. Flashback, not a finger touch flashback, Kara. This is an actual flashback for the audience. The potentials are all the dining room table. They're having their argument chats. And Buffy says telepathically to Willow, can you hear me? Kay, what? This is cool. I love this. Don't get me wrong. But what? Since when? And how?
Now.
Just because she willed it. She willed it to be, and it was so.
I will be very easy on the show for this, right? Like, we saw in season 6 that Willow can communicate telepathically. And there was actually some questions of consent around that.
Sure.
So Willow can broadcast, and it makes sense to me. It's very logical to assume that since Willow can broadcast, Willow could also receive. Buffy is intentionally thinking, Willow, can you hear me? Willow can pick up on that. Maybe there's some like Slayer power that Buffy has that kind of allows her to do that.
Maybe when they shared power at the end of same time, same place, maybe they kind of like established this little connection between them.
I mean, they did share power in Primeval as well, right?
So, hey, I want it to happen. I'm just saying, when? What time is it? And when did this happen? So Willow says, yeah, back to her in her head. And Buffy's like, we're losing them. We can't let this happen. I have an idea. Grab Xander. So as they walk by him, Willow's like, Xander, telepathically. And he's like, what? And that's why he said that, right? That we saw earlier. So they all head to the kitchen. Buffy says, I got to slay the Neandervab to get Spike out of the cave. But I need those girls to see me do it. And Willow's like, I get it, but this isn't the best venue for a SmackDown. They think for a second, and then Xander says, I know just the place. So the Scoobies plan this out. They're like, we want the girls to watch Buffy kick some ass because they've never seen it. They don't believe in her because they've never seen her do what she does best, you know?
Yes. And I will say, because again, I keep saying, oh, I misremembered this episode. I it's better than I expected it to be. Like, I hadn't forgotten this twist. I remembered that there's this big twist and reveal that they had planned this. What I don't recall in my gut was how satisfying it feels. I didn't remember that it felt this good when you're watching it. And I was really into it as I was watching this whole thing unfold. You know, when Buffy gives her speech and she says, welcome to Thunderdome, I got chills. Like, I'm really excited. So I like that. Even having watched this series so many times before, I keep rediscovering season 7. You know, the last time I watched the show, I was watching it with my best friend. And that was probably like only the third, maybe fourth time I'd seen season 7, because I usually just don't watch it. And I liked it better then. And now that you and I are recapping it, I might love season 7. and I might like this episode a lot more than I thought I did. I was going to criticize it for being a little bit too dark and hopeless, and maybe that's coming in this season, I don't know, but I was gonna be like, oh, this episode is just like, it's you know, Buffy takes so long to beat the vampire with a Y, and I mean I don't want to be one of those chodes who's like, Buffy can't lose, but like, it's hard. You have to strike the fine balance. You need the enemy to be threatening enough that Buffy can't just, you know, curb stop the vampire with a Y in one scene, but you also can't have Buffy get beat so badly that not only does it disillusion all of the potentials, but it also disillusions the audience. I don't envy the writers the line that they have to walk here, but I had forgotten how well they walk the line by the end of this episode. So my hat's off to them.
Yeah. Okay, let's finish this off. So we cut back to Buffy fighting the vamp with a Y. He throws her into scaffolding and Kennedy drops the crossbow. Buffy shoots it, but it doesn't die. She takes a pipe and starts fighting with it, but it gets taken away from her. So she grabs a pickaxe, which is just lying there. That's also taken from her. But I'll add, earlier when the vampire with a Y first showed up, it knocked over this big wheelbarrow full of tools, that's not standard safety. Anyway, it's knocked to the ground, right? And what I really like about this scene here is, again, Buffy is demonstrating to these girls what it means to be a slayer and why she's going to beat this guy. And she's using every weapon available around her. We know Buffy's resourceful. Yes. She's been doing this since day one. But the potentials have never seen it. So she's like, look, I can use a pipe. Look, I can use a pickaxe. Why is a pickaxe here? And the vampire with a Y, she called it earlier a Neander vamp. Giles said it's something ancient. It wouldn't even know what these tools are, you know, like, it's only using its fists because it's like a caveman, right? So it's not even picking up the weapons around it. Buffy is, you know?
Yeah, okay, but I think it's had some time to study in that cave.
I don't think it has, because it hasn't used anything. It just is like, it's relying on
its strength.
It
doesn't need anything. Yeah, it's overconfident, I think, exactly. At this point. It's like, nothing can beat me. Buffy is a video game level designer's dream, in that she will use every single random item that you have spawned in your video game level for the player to possibly use. Buffy will use all of it.
Yeah, and let's not forget that, again, this vampire with a Y is living in a cave with cave fire this whole time. Buffy even shone lights on it, right? Like the big like headlights, like the Showtime lights. It was just like, ah, when those came on. So like Buffy's a modern slayer. She's like, I'm going to get this guy with all my weapons and tools and resources, and he's not going to want to hit him. He's like the judge. He's like, no man can kill me. And this vampire with a Y is thinking the same thing. And Buffy's like, actually, I got lots of stuff in my back pocket that you don't know about. And I love it. So Buffy ends up getting beat up. It looks like it's going really bad for her. She gets thrown up into scaffolding, like above her, and she ends up on a platform up top. The Uber vamp lifts her up by her neck, and the potentials are like saying, we got to help her. And Willow's like, just wait, because Willow believes in Buffy's fighting ability. Buffy notices the arrow that's still inside the vampire with a Y's chest. She grabs it and punches a hole into its eye, and it lets her go. She ends up getting some really good punches and kicks in there. She ends up kicking it off the scaffolding into debris. She jumps down there. They both get some punches in, but then she grabs what looks like barbed wire or wiring, and she starts to strangle it from behind until eventually she beheads it and it dusts.
She garrots it. It's,
yeah.
Quite impressive.
Oh, it's sick. And again, she used tool. Like, she found something to use, and she used it. You know, she didn't use her bare hands, but she didn't have to. So she wipes the dust off of her hands, and she's like, see? Dust, just like the rest of them. I don't know what's coming next, but I do know it's going to be just like this. Hard, painful. But in the end, it's going to be us. If we all do our parts, believe it, we'll be the ones left standing. Here endeth the lesson. And she walks out, and all the potentials are satiated, and they follow her while the first watches on, unhappy and grumpy that it's vampire with a Y and Spike's new lover was destroyed.
You broke my toy.
Since when? Yeah, so love this. I love the speech at the end. So it's so inspiring, right? Because in the last episode, Buffy got her ass beat, right? But as we pointed out in that episode, Buffy was tired. Buffy was caught by surprise by this Uber vamp, right? Like, she wasn't at the top of her game. Now she's had a couple days to think about it. She's not surprised anymore. She thought out a plan, and she was confident. She knew that she could kill this thing. She just needed to have the right situation for herself.
Buffy is 2 for 2 with hero speeches. Back-to-back episodes.
Love it. All right, so the last scene, Spike sees Buffy standing before him with a knife, and he's like, you can't hurt me. You're just a bloody figment, you are. But Buffy then cuts him down, because it is the real Buffy. He touches her shoulder, and she stares at him. He stares at her. He starts to sob a little bit. And then she helps him walk out of the cave to freedom, arms around each other. Fade to black.
I actually really liked this final scene. I like that they didn't draw out the captivity of Spike, the rescue of Spike. There was no epic fight scene with Buffy and the Scoobies or the potentials charging in and fighting the Bringers and stuff. We didn't need that after everything else in this episode. We know Buffy is capable of taking on the Bringers, even if they were even there, or maybe the first has just kind of like abandoned this plan and pulled out for now. Whatever the case, I like that it was a subtle kind of like, yep, Buffy came for him. Spike is rescued. We don't need to say anything else about it right now.
Yeah, very subtle, right? And also, like, Buffy won this battle, right? Buffy won, and she needed a win. We needed a win. It's been kind of doomy and gloomy. Lots of funny things have been happening lately. Like, the scripts have been funny. But, like, you know, the doominess of the season has been building because of we're learning more about the first. The first seems to be, Buffy keeps saying the first is ahead of the game. The first is always going to be a step ahead of us. Clearly not Buffy, right? So her rescuing Spike at the end, his relief that, like, you know, his ordeal is over. It is a nice, subtle scene. I like it. So who's your hero?
I think it's pretty obviously Buffy, right? Yeah. Like, honorable mention, I think, to Dawn for the truth bombs, but it's Buffy.
I agree. It is Buffy. I also want to do a shout out to Dawn for just being badass.
Hot steaks time. We got some hot steaks. First one is from Shanze, who wants to talk about Willow in Him. Shanze says, I love this episode and Willow, but it reminded me of a recurring issue with Willow that you've discussed before, and how she violates boundaries and does stuff to people she loves without their consent because she thinks she knows what's best. We saw it with her relationship with Tara, RIP, And even though Willow was under a spell in this episode, the display of love that she chose was to change RJ's body and make him a woman without his consent so that he would fit into what she was attracted to. Sure, she was out of her mind, but this is a recurring pattern with Willow.
True.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know? I think Willow still has a long road in terms of learning boundaries and consent and proper use of magic. And it's, I think it's been pretty well established at this point that one summer in England does not cure you of all of those issues.
As much as we think it does. Thanks, Shanzay. So our next one is from Elijah, who wants to talk about Andrew. Elijah says, I don't like Andrew. It took me years to realize why. The reason is because it feels like Andrew got the story that Jonathan should have had. Andrew got everything Jonathan wanted. Jonathan wasn't perfect, but he got enough interiority that while you don't agree with his choices, you get him. You understand that what he really wants is the found family and community that Buffy has. I don't think it's an accident that in Superstar, Jonathan's spell didn't give him Buffy's powers. It gave him her community. So to see Andrew, who didn't want community, who didn't want to be good, who was comfortable just being a henchman, just fall upwards into it and then reluctantly get accepted into the group just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So I like this hot steak. Kara, you and I talked a bit about this in Never Leave Me, I think, about, you know, the tragedy mm-hmm. that is Jonathan and how Andrew, as a more comedic character, makes more sense to come in, even though it's a shame. But I really like how Elijah kind of laid it out here, why it's like, you know, deeply unfair. I like that he says that Andrew failed up, that he, you know, ended up in a situation that worked out really well for him when he really doesn't deserve
it. Typical mediocre white man.
Exactly. Exactly. So thanks, Elijah. I really liked this one.
Our last hot take is from Alex, who wants to talk about Cassie in conversations with dead people. Alex says, I have a thought on why the entity appears as Cassie. We already know it plays on Willow's guilt and recognition of the betrayal of Tara's memory to make her feel that she doesn't deserve to see Tara. It highlights Willow as being undeserving or having lost the right to see people she loved. They couldn't save Cassie. Unlike Tara, she literally was forewarned that Cassie was going to die, and so the guilt of being confronted with that so soon after her death is probably quite affecting. And Cassie is someone who saw her death and came to accept it. Alex says, you even talked about Cassie as potentially being interpreted as suicidal and the characters interpreting her as such at first. Cassie may have been a visual reference for Willow to start thinking about accepting death, which is where the first was trying to steer her. Ultimately, the entity is trying to prey on Willow's guilt and loneliness. And what better way to do that than to have someone appear to her that she never even met? Cassie was a clever choice for the first because she is familiar enough for Willow to initially trust her. And her clairvoyance makes it seem quite natural that she would be able to appear as a ghost or spirit. But she doesn't actually have a connection to Willow. And I think that's very effective at reinforcing this narrative that Willow's evil acts are being punished.
Yeah.
Steph is nodding along right now, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna take a moment here, let Steph talk. Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I think you've made a lot of valid points there, Alex, and I really appreciate you kind of sharing that, because I remember at the time as we were recapping the episode, I think we were focused a bit more on Willow's feelings of being manipulated by the first, and we talked a little bit about why Cassie might be there instead of Tara, as well as like some of the behind the scenes reasons. So I appreciate you kind of giving us that read on the first's clever psychological reasoning behind choosing Cassie.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And thanks everyone for your hot stakes. We're on episode 12 next, Kara, which means we will officially be halfway done season 7. So everyone, just a reminder, we are taking your hot stakes as early as you can send them. Right? We have 12 episodes left, but Kara and I generally record about 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time. So if you have an upcoming hot steak, send it on in as soon as you can.
Yes, please. Thank you so much to all of our supporters on Buy Me a Coffee, especially our chosen ones. Emma, Kyle, Destiny, Erica, Allison, Jace, Haley, Tasha, Ricky, Amy, Rochelle, Laura, and Bahi.
Brandon, Lauren, Kimmy, Christy, Jasmine, Susanna, Joshua, Louise, Nicola, Julian, Jordan, Kayla, and Holly. Thanks, everybody. See you next week. Bye. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Girls. If you want and can afford to donate, head on over to buymeacoffee.com/prophecygirls for one-time and monthly options.
You can also visit prophecygirls.ca/store to view all of our merch and rep the podcast on a sweatshirt, mug, sticker, or more.
We appreciate all of your support, even if it's just spreading the word about us or enjoying our show week by week.
We also invite you to join in the discussion by messaging us on our social media channels.
Follow us at Prophecy Girls Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy_Girls on Twitter.
You can also email us at prophecygirlspodcast@gmail.com or visit our website, prophecygirls.ca, where you can find the link to our Discord.
Praise Moloch.
See you next week.